All right, hi everybody, and welcome to History Through Art Week 13 for the junior and senior high class of American History with History at Our House. We are doing History Through Art on a Wednesday because we have test preparation tomorrow. So, good luck with that. Hopefully that is ongoing and going well. I welcome any questions you may have about that, but in the meantime, we are going to look at the painting. Here we go. So, whenever you're ready, let's talk first impressions. Bria, get us started. What's going on? Bria, hello? No, it's not. You were very quiet the other day, and I really need you to find a solution here. You got to crank things up over there. What's changed? Because something's changed and you're much softer. Try again.
Can you hear me now?
Barely. Again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, better. What are you doing?
I don't know.
Well, go to, before you try to answer, I want you to go to your audio options. I want you to crank up the microphone to 100% and then come back. Timothy, I'll let you get started then.
Okay, this painting is pretty interesting. Sorry, I have vitamins in my mouth. I like it a lot. I like that it's at sea. I especially like the sea. It's very interesting. And I like these colors.
Okay. All right. So Timothy's into it right away. He says he likes the sea. That's going to be, okay, something that will definitely be compelling if that's something you like. And, yeah, you like the use of colors. Okay. All right. Good. Alexander, how about you?
I immediately noticed that it has a much smaller field of view than all the other paintings we've been doing recently, which are like a big scene or a big room. This one has barely enough field of view to cover the height of the man, and I think if he stood up where he was, then his head would be off the top of the painting.
That is such an interesting observation. I really like that.
Okay. I agree with Timothy about the colors as well. There's the man's red pants or something, and the boy's green and black coat.
Yeah.
And I also like the texture of all the clothing. It's kind of, it's like it's been worn, but I like it.
Okay, all very interesting thoughts. I want to come back, I want to just highlight this point you made, Alexander, about the field of view. That's a very interesting expression. It sounds like kind of a photography term. I'm not an expert on those things, but I like your way of expressing it. And one thing that's interesting to me about that is we are outdoors, right, in this painting. However, it does feel like we are really in a small space almost. If it weren't for that large horizon and the great distance and openness of it, it would be a very intimate scene. We would be close to the participants. And as you say, if the man were to stand, we wouldn't be able to see his head anymore in this field of view, as you put it. So, yeah, that's very interesting. So we have an outdoor scene, but at the same time, a very intimate outdoor scene. That's a neat combination, unusual, especially with the wide openness of the background. And so here's an interesting question. How did the artist make this scene more intimate? The one thing he absolutely did, beyond just the field of view, how did he do that? How did he create intimacy outdoors? Do you notice that? And how did he make it smaller that way? Bria?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. I think it's the way the boys are sitting and the posture and the relaxedness of everything.
That might contribute. I agree. That's definitely an element. But there's something else that creates that. I'll put it this way. It's a very open scene. What is it that closes it? Or at least that reduces the level of openness, Juliet?
There's a wall. Right around them.
Yeah, the sea wall compresses the scene. So it makes it so that, yes, there is this great vast expanse beyond the wall. But everything that's happening in the painting is inside the wall. So it's almost like being inside. It's kind of both. It's like we are inside and outside. So yeah, that's an interesting effect. I hadn't focused on that before, but I really like Alexander's point, and now I've gained a new appreciation of the painting that way. Okay, Alexander, did you have a follow-up about that?
The wall, I think, right behind the man, it has a corner. So they're effectively sitting in a corner, which makes it even more intimate.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's not a right angle, but you're right that it is a corner, so it makes it more of an enclosure. I agree. Yeah, so that's quite fascinating. I like that. I like that very much. Yeah, what an interesting, I don't have any comparison to make here between another painting and this in that regard. This is unique in that there's this intimacy created in an outdoor scene. I really like that. This is very special. I love this artist. This artist is, I think his name is John Everett Millay. And he is one of my top five favorite artists of all time. I'm willing to put him in the top five. And so he is, this is something special here in that regard and many others. Okay. Anybody not like it? No problem if so. And I'd sure like to know why. But that's fine. Anybody not that keen or just not particularly interested? That's fine too. Okay. Nobody wants to fess up to that, so we can just go on then. All right. So, let me ask you this, because I find this to be an interesting question that might have a wide range of answers in this particular group. Is there a main character? If so, now we only have three, right? So in this painting, is there a main character? If there is, which one is it? Or are there two main characters? Or just three characters? This could be the source of, I think, some really interesting discussion. So I'm hoping that you will want to take it on. So Keen is on a mobile device. So go ahead, Keen.
All right. If I had to pick a main character, I would say that it's the boy in green. But I wouldn't say he's a strong main character. What makes me think that he's a main character at all is just because his dress is different. Even the boy next to him has, I would say, similarly dressy clothes, but they're black, and black is a much more neutral color, whereas this boy in green is not a common color, especially when your entire outfit is composed of it. So that's what makes me think he's the main character, but he's definitely not a strong main character in the sense that he's dominating the scene. In no way would I say he's dominating the scene. It is a very good balance of these three characters, I think.
Oh, okay, now you use some really good words there. I like the word balance. So you're saying you feel that the green character is compelling in a special way, but it's not one that you're saying strong. I think that's not quite the right word. It's Because it's not about, I guess, the intensity of the differentiation, but what you're saying is it's subtle and it's balanced. I like the word balanced, and I agree with that very much, because in a sense, if we look at the arrangement of the three characters, each of them, this one's here in this space, this one's here, and this one's here. They, even though the man is much larger and evidently more closely positioned to us, they each equally kind of take up a third of the main space of the painting. And so I like the word balanced. There's a balance here between them. So that's a good observation. Okay, Timothy?
Okay, I agree with Keen on the man, the boy in green is the main character. Originally, I was going to say the man is, but the problem with him being the main character, even though he's making a very, standing out gesture, we can't see his face. However, the boy in green's face, as Keen pointed out, well, also his outfit is different, but also his face is lit up, and it's lit up more than the boy in black. So I think if there was a main character, which I do, but as Keen said, not a very strong one, I would have to say it's the boy in green.
Okay. All right. So those are all good points. The man's gesture and posture are dramatic. And it's evident that he is drawing a reaction from the boys. In other words, they themselves are not active in this scene. They are the ones reacting to the man, who is the one generating this moment, in a sense. They are here as listeners, as viewers, as participants, whereas he is the actor. So that would tend to elevate him as a character. But Timothy's very right that, well, we can't see his face. And therefore, we are denied that element that is the dominant feature of a person, right? If you want to know about a person, more than half of your information is going to come from the face. So this character can never be a full character for us because we don't see the face. We've got clues about him and what kind of person he is and so on. We've got a lot of interesting clues. But we can never fully know him until we see the face. So that really means he can't be a main character. It's just too much information is denied us for him to be a main character. Alexander, go ahead.
I would say this painting is about contrast between the man and the boy in green, in addition to the boy in black. I would say the boy in black is a little bit less important because the man and the boy in green are sitting in approximately opposite directions, and they're very different. The man is barefoot, he has these ragged clothes, while the boy in green has these fancy shoes, he's wearing tights, I think, he has this coat and he has this fancy hat with feathers sitting next to him.
Okay, all right. All interesting thoughts. I need to do this for myself. Yeah, very interesting. Look at that. So, that's the exact center of the painting. It's interesting because when I view the painting, I feel like the boy's hands are the center. In other words, there's a difference between, strictly speaking, the geometric center and what I'm going to call the psychological center. And to me, this little compressed space in between the boy's hands is the psychological center of the painting, right here. It's like a little cavity, and you just get sucked into that little space there. That's just my sense of it. Feels, so the middle, and I've seen this in a lot of interesting paintings, where the artist has this trick of kind of making us feel a center that's not quite the center. And so I just wanted to see where the center is. It's more in that black void beneath his arms, but doesn't quite feel like it. It feels almost like the boy's face is the center. So he's evidently central. And that's interesting because of the characters, he's kind of the least interesting in some way. That's hard to articulate. We'll have to put words on that. And therefore, putting him in the center was a good choice as far as balancing out the painting is concerned. All right, so inevitably in this painting, I think that, you know, we could have other things to say about main characters. And it would be interesting to continue talking about that. And anything that occurs to you as we go along, please don't hesitate to bring it up, because I'm very fascinated by this composition. But at the same time, let's just, what inevitably we're going to do when we look at this painting is we're going to talk about all three of them. Right? There's no way around it. There are only three characters, and they are all intimately connected in this moment, and therefore we will survey them all, and that probably will give us a special appreciation. So we're about to embark on that here, but Bria might like to have another say first.
I really like their positions in the picture and how it kind of makes you want to figure out why they're doing it, not just because you have to, but it makes you want to, because you want to know why they're sitting like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And just let me point out something else compositionally here. I love the... Okay, so everybody is going to know this one, right? We've got this strong line here in the painting. Fine. But then we have this line in the painting, which is just slightly diagonal. See how it kind of compresses? And then we have this line in the painting. And then, you know, allied kind of lines associated with the wood. And so the painting has an even down here. Pardon me, I wanted something else. I want this line here. Even down here, we have a sense of it kind of compressing a little bit right there. So the painting has kind of a plane to it that is slightly receding off into the distance. It creates a nice three-dimensional effect. And so a vanishing point way, 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 way off that, I just like the way, now I tell you, when you take away the lines, hopefully you can still kind of feel that space the way it was created. The background, the sea, is very straight across, but then the space in the foreground has been made three-dimensional. Kind of neat that way. I like that. Okay, well, let's look at the boy in green. I'm going to zoom in a bit here. We've got a nice reproduction, so let's take a look at him more closely, front and center. So, tell me what you see. Okay, Timothy, go ahead.
Well, when you look close up, first of all, you can tell he's probably either very important or very rich. Maybe not very important, but important or rich because of his clothing. But he looks very interested, and his eyes are sort of... I think he's really into this story, and his eyes are kind of... I think this is the right word, sort of beady-eyed.
Okay. I'm not sure if it is or not. Beady in the sense of... No, I don't think it is. I've got to look that one up. Somebody can help us with that word. Maybe that would be helpful. But yeah, the eyes, I don't think we have to resort to that kind of word. They're wide open, right? That's kind of a basic, accessible description. But what else? What would be another way of putting it? Keen, go ahead.
I'm not sure how to put his eyes. They actually look, rather than being beady, I understand why Timothy said that, because they are, I don't know, I can't quite articulate, but the way I would articulate his eyes specifically is just that they're wide, they're big, actually, compared to his face. He has big eyes, and they're very wide open. One of the first things I noticed about him overall was that he's very drawn in. I mean, this story, either he's chilly because of the ocean breeze, or this story is very affecting and maybe scaring him a little bit, because he's very drawn in. That's a semi-relaxed posture, but I feel as though he might have his legs extended, or he might be like the boy in black next to him if he didn't have some sort of emotion that makes him feel like he needs to draw in that much.
Okay, all right. The posture is very evocative. It's very it's a posture that and that really kind of communicates his emotional state along with his eyes. Absolutely. And so, and if we take, for instance, the outfit for just a second also, that we've, you know, this decorative, ornate kind of outfit with the hat, with the decorative band, and then the decorative feathers, and the little, lacy kind of flowers, that are the buckles on the shoes, and all of that kind of speaks of nobility or high rank and wealth. Right? And then, well, one interesting thing about that is, does this strike you as an outfit for going to the beach? Right? Is this what you would wear if you're going to be in this place? It's kind of an interesting, it's a little bit discordant in that regard, but it's not jarring and dissatisfying, but it's an interesting contrast, especially in light of the fact that the man is barefoot and has a very plain hat. And so we have this interesting contrast in their stations in life. That's part of the painting. And so, yeah, he's definitely wealthy, an aristocratic type of a character, well off. But his gesture and posture suggest, along with his face, a certain experience that he's having. Alexander, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the way he's looking at the man or somewhere past him is his head is tilted down, but his eyes are looking up. So it's like he was looking at the ground, but then he turned his eyes up, though I'm not sure.
Yes, so that's a good point. Where is the gaze directed is one of the challenges here, right? So where is the gaze directed? Hold on a sec. Let me kind of draw the line out. Why don't I have my annotation tool? There it is. Okay, it's not like this, right? It's not to the man's face. So then, is it to the hand, to the finger? That doesn't feel very satisfying either. It doesn't really feel very satisfying either. Priya, go ahead.
I can put myself in his shoes and see it like this. So, he's looking at the man. But there's no specific point of view. I'm just going to put an example up there. When you get in trouble with your parents, you don't look at them. You're looking somewhere at them, but you're not making eye contact because you're either scared or upset or something, and so you don't make eye contact.
All right, so I like this comparison. The comparison is to a child who feels embarrassed or contrite or upset because of the scolding of a parent. There's a real similarity here. And yeah, that can be that a kind of reaction that a child will have, and grown-ups can have it too, where you kind of don't look at the person in question because the fact that you're a little bit upset, and it causes you to, your gaze to waver or to go off to the side as a way of kind of trying to keep yourself under control. And I think there's a part of that. And Keane said something else about how he's drawn up or something to that effect, drawn tightly together. There's more to it than that. Go ahead, Alexander.
I would say that he's looking at the wall past the man, but only a little bit past the man. Either looking at where the wall borders with the sea or where the wall borders with the ground. I just have a feeling that he's looking at not just at the plain wall.
No, definitely not looking at the wall, because we don't know. I mean, we can infer that the wall continues, but we don't know it, and we don't have anything over there that he would be looking at. So he's definitely gazing. He's definitely in a moment, a personal moment, rather than literally looking at something. And that goes together with his posture. And now going back a little bit to, again, kind of look at him more closely. Look at the hands and the posture. And somebody suggested, you know, doing the old history through art selfie here, because it's a good one to do. Because if you draw up your knees like this, put your feet together and draw up your knees, notice that if you do that for a second, it's not easy to hold this pose. In particular, I find that when I start to adopt this pose, it's not natural for my knees to be together. So, in other words, I have to put a little bit of extra pressure and kind of draw them in on purpose. Right, so it's kind of a defensive posture and a little bit of an insulating posture. So he's tight and a little uncomfortable. You wouldn't sit like this for a long time because it's just not comfortable. Let alone that you're sitting on the sand, the sand there, or the pebbles and stuff on the beach. It's just not a comfortable posture. So he's not quite comfortable. he's in a moment of reaction, a moment of introspection. It's straining on the back and on the neck. You're absolutely right. And you have to clasp your arms like that, the way that the left hand comes around and tightly holds the left wrist. It's necessary to maintaining this posture. Otherwise, you're going to kind of fall apart. You can't hold this pose without being tense. There's a good point. You can't hold this pose without, contracting your muscles, right? Without holding yourself in it. There you go. You have to literally hold this pose. So yeah, he's definitely being very affected by this experience. Okay. Anything else, Priya?
It's kind of an intense thing. So I was just remembering, sometimes when I go to the library and they have reading time, lots of kids do that when they're listening to a story of some sort. If it's like they're drawn into it and it makes them want to listen harder, and so they think maybe if they pull themselves together, that will help. I used to do that too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. And sometimes it's kind of an unselfconscious thing, but you adopt a posture that kind of reflects your state of mind, basically. It's normal for human beings to do that, right? Without thinking about it. When you're feeling lazy and really relaxed, you end up sprawled on the couch. when you are studying and you are very focused, well, your elbows are on the table and your head is down and you're working. And your posture tends to reflect your state of mind. And so definitely, I agree with you, Bria, that this is a child's kind of posture with regard to an exciting story. And something that he's kind of drawing himself together and being there. He's especially affected by it. So let's talk about the boy in black now. Because it's an interesting contrast, right? What's his story? What do we say about him? Let's compare posture for one thing. And then, of course, facial expression. What do we see? Keen, go ahead.
It is quite a contrast between the boy in black and the boy in green. The boy in black seems much less affected emotionally. He's interested in the story. He's resting his chin on his hands. But that's a more relaxed posture. He's not nearly as drawn in as the boy in green. And he just doesn't... The story isn't affecting him as much. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely sitting in rapt attention. But he's not going to... I wouldn't say this is going to stick with him. He's not going to be remembering this when he goes home to bed tonight in the painting. I can't be sure about that.
That's yeah.
Getting into some shaky speculation.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, he doesn't seem to be as emotionally affected.
Okay, all right. We could speculate about what the results are going to be for each of them. But you're right that this is going to be more memorable for the boy in green. They're more affecting. And more consequential. And so the boy in black is in a more comfortable pose, right? He has his legs crossed, and that allows him to rest his elbows and to rest his chin on his hands and to look up at the man who's telling the story. And in this case, that's what it is, right? We see that he's looking up at him. And so it's not the reverie, it's not the kind of gaze of somebody who has now been carried into the realm of the imagination, and their mind is off racing somewhere. That's the boy in green, right? He is now, and in a sense, he's in a world of his own now. The man has said something that has set him off. But he's off now on his own, right? And I can always tell when I'm telling my son a story or teaching him something and he gets that far off look, it's, well, I know that he's gone somewhere else. And whereas if he's looking at me like the boy in black, well, he's paying attention. And so, yeah, that's good. He's focused in everything, but it's not the same result. Yeah, so attentive would be a good word. Interested would be a good word. Focused. Anything else? Intent. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's pull back here. Take this in a little bit more. Since the scene is not as complex as others, we could keep going. Or we could just say, all right, we've handled our two main characters for the time being. I think that's a nice balance for in terms of how we're going to address this painting. I think looking at the two boys on day one and then talking about the man and the context in day two is going to be about the right balance. So I'm not going to push or forge ahead here. I think that we've done enough. For now, anyway. So, I like All right, I think that's enough. Unless anybody has a pressing observation or questions, we'll call it a day for today. We'll just have a short class. All right, so good luck with your test preparation. I'm eager to see what you're going to be able to come up with, especially with the questions regarding the anchor facts. That's going to be interesting. Alexander, yes.
Random thing I noticed about the painting?
Yeah.
In the background on the left, there's this tiny little boat that you can see on the...
Yeah, that's right. That's definitely part of the context. Right. Okay, good. Yeah, look around. There's a lot of little intriguing details. Absolutely. Okay, thanks, folks. Have a good one. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.